For most of the 20th century, Downtown Crossing was Boston's iconic retail shopping district. It was anchored by the venerable Jordan Marsh and Filene's department stores on Washington Street, and at this time of year, they were lit up with Christmas window displays and tree lightings. But in the last few decades, Downtown Crossing has languished. Jordan Marsh was taken over by Macy's in 1996. Filene's flagship store closed its doors in 2006, and even the seemingly indestructible Filene's basement shut down in 2011. A stretch of Washington Street was converted to a pedestrian mall in an attempt to attract more shoppers. But despite this and promises of new commercial and residential development, Downtown Crossing has stagnated. The shell of the old Filene's has remained empty, and Washington Street is pockmarked with boarded-up storefronts. Recently, however, there have been signs that Downtown Crossing may be poised for a renaissance. Several new commercial and residential projects, including a proposed 60-story residential tower at the site of the old Filene's, have been recently approved or are under construction. There appears to be a feeling of optimism among city planners, politicians, and local residents that a revitalization of this historic shopping district may finally be underway. But why am I writing about this? After all, I only get into Boston 4 or 5 times a year. But I like cities. I grew up in one, and I know that when there's a vitality flowing through their centers, it feeds not only economic health, but unexpected possibilities for grace and beauty that can rival those found in the natural world. I remember one particular crisp December day about 15 years ago when I went up to Boston with friends to attend an evening concert. We had just walked across the Common and made our way down West Street out into the bright, noon, crowded, colorful human carnival that was Washington Street. More than any other place in Boston at that time, Downtown Crossing had the air of a medieval fair. And like those fairs, there was a great mix of class and ethnicity. And the street entertainment in the form of buskers and musicians was informal and delightfully unpredictable. As we came out on the corner of West and Washington, a girl stood on the far corner facing the intersection. She was a young woman in her 20s, tall and thin, with long, straight, reddish-blonde hair, wearing a checked long-sleeved shirt and jeans, and there was an upturned flannel hat at her feet. We heard her before we saw her. A high, soaring, coloratura voice singing an aria from Donizetti. I thought at first the voice was amplified, but it wasn't. She was using the natural resonance of the building's facades, and her voice seemed to create a space, a bubble of isolated sound among the general hubbub. People gathered, transfixed on the other three corners of the site. Her voice was better than good. She was probably a student at one of the city's music conservatories. She held up her hands, her arms, as she sang imploringly, as immersed in the role as if she had been up on a stage with Klieg lights blinding out the audience. She gave the impression of standing alone, on some precipice overlooking the ocean, calling for some lost love, rather than on a curb in downtown Beantown singing for quarters. It was the nakedness of her presence that held us, that unenhanced, unprotected voice singing gratuitously for us, that sense of beautiful, pure isolation in a crowd that propelled us to spontaneous applause when she finished and knelt down to her hat on the street to gather up dollar bills blowing away in the corner crosswinds. So why do I write about this? Well, if the revitalization of an urban shopping district can create the possibility of unexpected transcendent moments like that, then count me in as one of its most fervent supporters.